2.2 million Americans filed for foreclosure on their homes in 2007, and the trend doesn't show any signs of slowing down. On this week's Please Explain, we're taking a look at foreclosures, why they're happening in record numbers, and what borrowers can do to prevent them. And joining me now are Michael McKenzie, U.S. Markets Correspondent for the Financial Times, and Josh Zinner, Co-Director at the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project. And I'm very pleased to welcome them to the show. Hello.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi.
Michael, can you give us a brief breakdown as to why there's been so many foreclosures recently?
Well, the key factor here is that there's just been a very sharp decline in house prices. And if you look at an index such as the Case-Shiller index, which measures house prices for the 20 major cities here in the United States, prices are now back to where they were in March of 2005. You've also got a huge overhang of unsold properties, close to a year's worth of inventory, which is continuing to add pressure to falling to the house market. Prices keep falling. And you've also got the specter here of investors being forced. The housing boom was really generated by investors who were given these teaser rates back in 2005, 2006, and these are now starting to expire. So investors are being, basically homeowners are being forced to negotiate new mortgages at higher levels of interest. And when they look at what's happening with their home prices, they're falling. They're, in many cases, are deciding it's better to just simply walk away.
So you're saying it's the teaser rates on the one hand, and it's also tight money throughout the economy.
Yes, that's.
If I could interject on that.
Sure, Josh, go.
Just to emphasize sort of the root of this problem. I mean, it is true that the decline in house prices has forced a higher number of foreclosures. But really, what this goes back to is an explosion in abusive subprime lending, and that was really fueled by sort of a hearty appetite on Wall Street for securitization of mortgage-backed securities. They were so profitable that Wall Street started inviting lenders, or increasingly invited lenders, to originate loans regardless of whether they were affordable or viable. And they were buying up hundreds of millions of dollars worth of mortgage-backed securities whether or not they were good loans or not. So that you had a lot of unscrupulous lenders out there all over the country who were offering loans to borrowers and not underwriting them for affordability or for viability or for whether they were in the best interest of the borrower, because they could sell them off to Wall Street either way. And so the focus was on originating a high dollar value, a high volume of mortgages, and not on whether or not these mortgages were viable. And then when you add it in, I mean, this goes back, 10 years or more. Then when you add in sort of in the last few years, these products that were marketed by the investment banks that were underwriting the securities, adjustable rate mortgages, payment option adjustable rate mortgages, all these clever loans that that created exploding interest rates for borrowers. When you factored that in as well, you just had an enormous amount of borrowers whose loans were unaffordable, and it created very high rates of foreclosure. What the industry was counting on was that borrowers continuing to refinance as their mortgage payments went up with these exploding interest rates, but when house prices dropped, it was sort of a perfect storm because borrowers didn't have the equity to refinance, and you just had this explosion in foreclosures.
So we're talking about greedy lenders, investment banks, buyers, but also people have been saying that it might be the fault of Alan Greenspan and the Fed.
I have to say this is something that was brought to Greenspan's attention and the Fed's attention early on. I mean, at the end of the last decade, there were advocates all over the country who were sort of screaming about this problem, saying, there are these lenders out there that are making all sorts of unaffordable, abusive mortgages, repeatedly refinancing people until their equity was gone, and everybody's making a killing off it, except these borrowers are losing their homes. And a lot of these, this was brought to the attention of Greenspan and the Fed early on. And his attitude was, the markets will correct themselves. But, where there's an incentive to make a killing, the market is not going to correct itself, and it didn't. So there really is a lot of this blame really does go on Greenspan's doorstep for not acting in time. The Fed is trying to catch up now and properly regulate these markets, but Greenspan completely dropped the ball.
And Michael, you'd go along with that?
I think to a certain extent, Josh is correct. I mean, certainly by cutting interest rates to 1% in 2003, the Fed certainly created a bubble in housing. But you have to remember, too, that politicians in this country were constantly extolling the virtues of rising home ownership here in America this decade. This was seen as something that was virtuous for the economy. The problem is that prices, it was a bubble out, and they've now started to fall. The other problem you've got isn't just about subprime. You've got a lot of people who held mortgages in recent years who took advantage of the low interest rates back in 2003 and 2004 and refinanced. They also extracted a lot of equity out of their homes. In effect, they were turning their homes into automatic teller machines and taking the cash and going and spending it. That now is coming home to roost as house prices start to fall and look likely to keep on falling.
My guests on Please Explain today, where we're talking about foreclosures, are Michael McKenzie, U.S. markets correspondent for the Financial Times, Josh Zinner, co-director of the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project, NEDAP, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lope. Let's back up, and what is the legal definition of a foreclosure? What steps are taken before buyers are evicted from their homes?
Well, a foreclosure takes different forms in different states. In New York State, there's a process that's called judicial foreclosure. And so in order to foreclose on a property, what a lender must do is go to courts, to use the courts to get a judge's order that the property can be auctioned in foreclosure.
So in each individual case, they have to go to the court?
In New York, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's not true for other states.
In other states have a non-judicial foreclosure process where it quite frankly, the lender can foreclose very quickly without a court process. I mean, the advantage of the process in New York State is that it gives borrowers who have been targeted for abusive loans the opportunity to raise defenses in foreclosure.
Now, is this
the problem? I should say is that most borrowers don't know that they have defenses, and there's very little by way of legal resources for low and moderate income people to actually get lawyers.
But has anybody proposed a federal law that might make all of the that would cover all the foreclosures around the country?
Well, typically the foreclosure is a state law process.
I understand, but the companies that are lending the money generally cross state lines, and usually that's an excuse for getting the federal government involved in this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, what the federal government needs to do is not so much to create a uniform process for foreclosure, but what the federal government needs to do is create avenues by which borrowers who have been targeted for these abusive loans, and we're talking about millions of borrowers, can work out affordable accommodations with their lenders, and that's something that the government has not done. There's proposals on the table to create funds to purchase and restructure abusive loans. Those are being blocked by Republicans. There's a proposal on the table to allow bankruptcy judges to modify loans to make them affordable. That's also being blocked by Republicans, by the administration. So there's a lot of things that the federal government can and should do in this process that go far beyond just the technical aspects of how properties are foreclosed on.
By the way, we invite calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Michael, if left alone, what will the free market do to address the problem?
Well, the free market will continue to push house prices lower, and at some point, the availability of housing becomes cheaper, and at some point, we begin to see a recovery. But it's very difficult to see any recovery in sight for at least the next year or possibly even 2 years. If you look at the house price futures that are quoted on the Chicago exchanges, they're expecting further declines in the region of anywhere between 20 to 30% in some of the major cities over the next 18 months.
Just to interject here, I mean, the free market created this problem. And the free market only works with with strong regulation against deceptive and abusive practices. So I think the only way that the market is going to correct this problem is with strong action by the federal government to regulate abusive lending going forward.
Sorry to interject here too, but the government has played a part in this housing boom. It played a part because you get a tax write-off from your mortgage interest, and you have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to government-sponsored enterprises that go out there and buy mortgages, and that also fed into Wall Street adopting a very laissez-faire attitude towards housing. So the government's already deeply involved in the housing market, and arguably is perhaps part of the problem as well.
And that may be the case, but the problem is the government was not heavily involved regulating abusive practices, and that's what needs to change going forward.
Well,
I think what you're talking about is the government created avenues for home ownership, which, however well-intentioned, created a loosening of credit that abusive lenders and investment banks who were securitizing the mortgages took advantage of, so that you ended up with a lot of abusive loans. So to close the loop, what the government needs to do is to regulate these practices so that we have equity, fairness in lending.
As you mentioned earlier, Josh, Michael, you get into this as well. The Democrats have had a different approach. The Republicans, I'm not sure whether Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have considerably different approaches. But John McCain had a bit of a change of heart just yesterday when he said he'd support helping out the most deserving homeowners to refinance and get federally guaranteed 30-year mortgages. Does that mean that he's retrenching because he's running for president, or do you think that signals a change among the Republicans as well? Michael, you first, and then you, Josh.
Well, I think McCain has to recognize that there are people there who are genuinely duped into mortgages. There are people there who are genuinely in need of help. I think but McCain also strikes, I think, an interesting balance because he's saying, let's help the people who have a home, but not so people who went out and took out a second mortgage to buy an apartment or a beach house, or who went and bought condos looking to flip them. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because I also think, and it's particularly true living here in New York, there are a lot of people here who couldn't afford to get onto the housing ladder and who just continued to rent because they can't afford housing, because it just kept going up and up. Now housing prices are coming down. There's going to be a chance for a number of people in this country to say, okay, I can now at last afford to go and buy a house. And I think McCain is sort of trying to navigate between those two forces.
Josh, you were talking about abusive lenders. Was what they were doing illegal?
Yeah, you mean the practices that I was speaking about before? Certainly illegal. You know, the problem is that regulation and the laws didn't keep up with the practices. So, you know, there were laws in place, Truth in Lending and so forth, a ways back, but the lenders adopted very creative ways to make a high dollar volume of mortgages. And so while a lot of these practices were illegal, when you look at state deceptive practices or fraud laws, they weren't specifically prohibited by regulation. That was part of the problem. I think, just going back to the McCain issue, I think that it's a positive thing that he's coming around and recognizing that there's a problem. I think he's under a lot of political pressure to do so, and I would hope that that he would take a much stronger position going forward. I think he's sort of just following along with what the administration's doing, which is sort of doing as much as they can to provide political cover, but not offering real effective solutions.
Now, we've heard about a lot of financial firms that have been hurt by this, but aren't there any number that are doing rather well as a result of this surge in foreclosures? For so-called foreclosure mills, for example?
Well, certainly the lawyers who represent lenders in foreclosure are doing quite well here. This explosion of abusive lending has been sort of a losing proposition for everybody all around. Homeowners have lost out, and now investors have lost out. Investment banks made a killing off it, but now, as you see, they're writing off billions of dollars in losses. So it's been a disaster all around for the economy.
A recent study found that questionable fees were added to borrowers' bills in almost half the loans. And is that something that should have been regulated? Were regulators just looking the other way?
Yeah, that's one of the things, gouging on fees that should have been regulated much more closely. And the most important thing and the most pervasive abuse is the making of loans that are unaffordable to borrowers.
How are bankruptcy judges dealing with abusive lending practices?
The problem is that the bankruptcy judges, their hands are tied. Although for a vacation home, a bankruptcy judge on that mortgage can modify the mortgage. For a primary residence, if somebody files a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, the judge can't modify the terms of that loan. The borrower has to repay the loan in full at the same terms, and it really ties bankruptcy judge's hands in terms of finding an equitable resolution when a borrower is in foreclosure and files for bankruptcy. And this is, you know, this is something that there's a bill in the House, and there wasn't one in the Senate that was killed. In the House, it's Barney Frank's bill to amend the bankruptcy law to allow for judges to have some flexibility in modifying mortgages. But again, it's been killed by the industry and by Republicans. It would the Center for Responsible Lending estimated that these changes in the bankruptcy law would help up to 600,000 homeowners stay in their homes, and it wouldn't cost the federal government a dime. But that's been killed.
We have to go into a break. Michael, you want to add anything before we go into that break?
I just think it's going to be very interesting this year, given it's an election year, and I think it's quite likely you're going to see some form of government help for homeowners. But I think it's also politicians going to have to be wary that there could be a backlash from people who couldn't afford to get onto the house, that these efforts are too generous and particularly reward people who are really speculating. And I think there was a great deal of speculating. Josh is right. There's certainly abusive lending, and there's certainly people who were victims of these sort of types of mortgages, but there was a lot of speculation going on,
were people who were lying about their resources.
Well, that's the other factor too. Yes.
Well,
so-called ninja loans, and
you know, I guess I would jump in and say here, certainly there were a lot of investment opportunities going on, or people being duped into investment opportunities, and I think this discussion about finding ways to help homeowners, nobody's talking about helping investors. It's helping people stay in their primary residences, and you know, you have a whole spectrum of borrowers going on, but it's thrown out there, you know, that borrowers were taking out loans that they couldn't afford and so forth. But it's important not to lose sight of the fact that many people were duped into mortgage products that really appeared to be affordable, and then payment option adjustable rate mortgages, but then the terms change in a couple of years and they become unaffordable. People are told, that you can refinance out of this. So, you know, we're not talking about investors here. We're talking about people staying in their homes, and we're not talking about people who are defrauding anybody. We're talking about people who were duped by reckless lenders into getting loans that weren't viable.
We're going to take a little break, and then we'll come back with your calls to Josh Zinner, co-director of the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project, and Michael McKenzie, U.S. Markets Correspondent for the Financial Times. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Did you know that you can not only hear guests on The Lopate Show, you can also see some of them as well? We have just posted video clips of recent interviews I did with Phil Donahue, Isabel Allende, Anika Noni Rose, and others. Go to WNYC.org and click on to video. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're also heard on satellite.
WNYC support comes from American Express, who offers card members advance tickets to the Tribeca Film Festival from April 12th through April 18th. More information is available at TribecaFilmFestival.org or 866-941-FEST. American Express, are you a card member? First Independent Pictures and American Sterling, presenting Dark Matter, a 2007 Sundance Prize winner, starring Liu Yi, Aidan Quinn, and Meryl Streep, now open in theaters. More information at DarkMatterTheFilm.com. The Valley Hospital Spine Center, providing specialized care for back or neck pain caused by injury, deformity, or degenerative conditions. Services include neurosurgery and orthopedic surgery. More at 201-251-3491.
Some of the greatest jazz groups have lousy names. No wonder all the quartets and quintets seem alike. Today on Soundcheck, how to fix jazz's image problem. That's coming up at 2 on 93.9 FM WNYC. We are back with Michael McKenzie, U.S. Markets Correspondent for the Financial Times, a man who also studied filmmaking. I don't know how that is connected. And Josh Zinner, co-director at the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We're talking about foreclosures on today's Please Explain. And Karen from Montclair, New Jersey, you are on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to ask a question about the role of appraisers. who were also involved, I gather, in appraising houses higher than they should have, so that, from what I understand, the problem was not just a simple supply and demand factor, but also fraud, and fraud, I gather, with the collusion of realtors and banks in this. Could you please explain to me whether this could be prosecuted under racketeering laws?
I can jump in first. There is definitely a big problem with fraud with appraisers, and I'm glad you asked the question. Particularly in the home purchase market, what was happening was that there were speculators, dishonest speculators, who were going around getting properties in foreclosure out of foreclosure sales, and then working in collusion with appraisers, attorneys, and lenders to seek out borrowers, first-time home buyers primarily, and mostly people of color, to sell homes to them that were overappraised. They would purchase them, you know, let's say a $150,000, and do very cosmetic repairs, and then resell them at an overappraised value within 2 or 3 months of, you know, say $350,000, and again, this was working because the appraisers were fraudulently overappraising the properties, and because the lenders were looking the other way and making loans that weren't affordable to borrowers. So this abuse, which we call property flipping, has been very, very widespread and was fueled by the same appetite for mortgages on Wall Street, whether or not these mortgages were affordable.
Can it be prosecuted under racketeering laws?
It can be. You know, enforcement is a problem. You know, unfortunately, a lot of these practices were not subject to the rigorous enforcement that they should have been subject to. I know that the district attorney offices in New York City are overwhelmed, but they didn't have enough people devoted to real estate fraud to really do the effective prosecuting job that they could have. You know, these practices in New York City were overwhelming. You're talking about thousands and thousands of properties that were flipped in this fashion, creating high rates of foreclosure.
Are there certain neighborhoods that were more affected than others?
Yeah, and you know, again, speaking specifically about New York City, these property flipping practices and also the lending practices in general that we were talking about before, you know, much of which is refinancing, were targeted in the same neighborhoods of color, where there's a high level of home ownership and you know, amongst working poor families and older people, neighborhoods in central Brooklyn and East Brooklyn and Southeast Queens, the North Shore of Staten Island, the Northeast Bronx, that have, again, these same characteristics, working poor in neighborhoods of color.
But isn't it the responsibility of a borrower to know how much he or she can afford?
It is, but again, a lot of these abuses were premised on misrepresentation. Were actually
so that's, you know, fraud.
Fraud and misrepresentation. So the borrowers were told one thing, and then they come to the table and there's something else. So many of these deals, and especially these property flipping deals, the speculators would actually bring their own attorneys and say, this person's going to help you, and so people would be duped into believing that they were entering into a different product than they actually were. Or if they sat at the mortgage, you know, if you've been to a mortgage closing, you're sitting there with, you know, 50 pieces of paper, and you have a scenario where you have a borrower, many of whom were, you know, not as educated, not as sophisticated, sitting at the table without their own representation, with five guys in suits sitting around rifling, you know, I'm putting them through 50 pieces of paper and having them sign each document. And, you know, unfortunately, this happened in a lot of these loans. So a lot of people either didn't understand what they were getting into, or if they did catch something at closing, were told, oh, you know, this is the way it has to be, but in 6 months we'll refinance you into a cheaper product. So, you know, again, there's a whole spectrum of borrowers here, but many, many, many of these borrowers who were caught up in these abusive deals were defrauded or were subject to misrepresentation.
But despite what you say, I suspect that our prisons will not wind up being filled with the people who've engaged in fraud here, displacing the people who've been arrested on drug charges in the past. David from Glen Ridge, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm kind of two minds about this whole thing, but a big problem I have with what's going on is that I'm reading articles about people who are making, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, and we're told that they can afford a $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 house. Now, everybody knows banks will always let you borrow more than you can afford. That's been my experience. I'm no kid. I bought a couple of houses. I own two houses right now. When I give them my income, or at least a couple of years ago when I did, I was given astronomical amounts of potential credit. But I was smart enough to do my homework and to know what I can afford. Now I'm seeing potential bailouts of these people who have bought these houses, and I feel for these people if they're going to lose their homes. However, how does somebody think they can afford a $4,000 mortgage if they're making $6,000 a month or $8,000 a month?
We get your point. Do you want to answer him?
Yeah, I mean, let me address sort of the second part, because I think I talked a little bit about the first part in my response to the last caller. But, you know, when you say bailout, I think the proposals on the table are not to take taxpayer money and hand it to irresponsible borrowers. The proposals on the table involve, to the extent that taxpayer money is up, what they involve is expanding the government-guaranteed loan program to enter into modifications that are in fact affordable, not a give out to people who don't pay their loans. So it's important to correct that misunderstanding. And you know, this is, you know, given that the Federal Reserve just bailed out the Wall Street and then Bear Stearns to the tune of $230 million total by essentially guaranteeing that money with taxpayer funds, it's actually a pittance. What, you know, these programs that are being talked about in Congress involve a much smaller figure of in taxpayer money guaranteeing loans. But to address the first part, you know, I certainly there are many borrowers who were irresponsible in this project, in this process, and there were also a huge number of borrowers who were duped. And there is a continuum here.
Let's put Karen on the line. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Pompton Plains, New Jersey.
Yes.
You must own your own home.
Yes, we are in a home that we have a mortgage for. My husband got a call on a Saturday morning from the company that we have a mortgage with, and they were offering him about half our monthly payment and without any changes in terms of the loan. And I said, well, that can't be. Well, come to find out, the paperwork, when you read the fine lines, said that after the 30-year term, you would have paid the interest and not the principal. So basically, when I would be about 70, I would have $200,000 that I still owed. And they were offering this, and I think that's one of the duping products that they were using, because my husband was like, this is great. And I said, wait a minute, read the fine print. And I was just wondering, you know, is that one of the products you're talking about? And is there anything we can do to stop people from offering something like that?
Josh?
One of the more abusive types of products I touched on this earlier, what are called payment option adjustable rate mortgages. And these are mortgages where people are paying interest only for a couple of years, what usually amounts to a couple of years, and then all of a sudden they're paying back the full principal and interest at a much higher interest rate. So it causes their payment to basically explode. But these loans aren't being underwritten at the monthly payment they're going to be at in 2 years. They're being underwritten at the low monthly payment. So, yes, this is a very common abusive product that's out there. It's important, we don't say that these products should be completely banned, but these products need to be heavily regulated to ensure that if they're underwritten so that they're going to be affordable for the borrower in 2 years and in 5 years and not just at the point that they close on the loan.
Paul from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call. I wanted to counter a little bit of what your guest is saying. I have purchased literally hundreds of properties off foreclosure in the five boroughs of New York City over the past 5 years. And in that capacity, I've had to interact with literally hundreds of borrowers who have been foreclosed on. And while it's absolutely true that there are instances that will really pull at your heartstrings of people who are perhaps taken advantage of victims of predatory lending, an enormous percentage, if not an outright majority, are people who got dollar signs, borrowers, who saw dollar signs in front of their eyes. Banks offered them money, and they bought more house than they could afford. And to absolve them of any responsibility is obscene. It's like blaming McDonald's because there's an obesity epidemic in this country. It is outrageous, firstly. Secondly, the notion that people of color are being targeted is also equally outrageous. I would invite your guests to come with me to a foreclosure auction. I go every single day. I just came from one. I, as a white person, am a minority in the room. White people might constitute 10 to 15% of the regular bidders at auctions. People of all stripes and colors and backgrounds come to these auctions. They buy. It doesn't matter if it's in the Upper West Side or in St. Albans, Queens. There's an active market out there of people buying as long as you can make money. And the people who are doing it, who are in my position, come from every background imaginable. The idea that this is some kind of race bait is nonsense.
Okay, we got your point. Do you want to respond quickly?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to say to that. I would just say a couple of things. First of all, you know, I'm not just saying off the cuff that there's racial targeting going on here. This is something that's been very carefully documented, not just by our organization, but by Senator Schumer, by Freddie Mac, by a whole bunch of people. So, you know, there's a lot of evidence to indicate that, both hard evidence and anecdotal evidence. And the second thing is, I would just say, I don't think anyone's suggesting that. That any borrower is absolved of all responsibility. We're just looking for a way to restructure loans to make them affordable where that's viable.
Michael, have you looked over the proposals of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Do they look pretty much the same?
I think they do, and I think they're just trying to come up with a way to sort of mitigate some of the pain. The question is, of course, is it a painkiller that only lasts briefly, and then you've still got the underlying problem, namely that house prices are continuing to fall, because we've had such a huge run-up in prices. And while the focus is still on subprime, don't forget, in a number of the cities such as New York and San Francisco, you're talking about people who took out jumbo mortgages, who put it down a lot, took out big, big mortgages, now facing higher interest rate costs. In spite of the Federal Reserve rate cuts we've seen since September, longer-term borrowing rates haven't really come down that much. And the more the economy weakens and the higher unemployment continues to go, and let's not forget you've got some big job losses coming through from Wall Street now, the overall housing market is going to continue to deteriorate.
So we can expect to see a lot more foreclosures throughout this year.
Yes, absolutely.
And some people are suggesting the banks are too powerful in Washington for there to be serious legislation passed.
I think that's a legitimate point. I think there also seems to be a problem with the actual regulation in this country, not just in housing, but in other areas of the markets. At the moment, you've got the Fed sort of scrambling to try and plug all the holes that have now emerged as the bubble has truly burst. And you get a strong sense that no one's really in charge.
I have to leave it there. Unfortunately, I've run out of time. Please Explain's guests today have been Michael McKenzie, U.S. Markets Correspondent for the Financial Times, and Josh Zinner, Co-Director of the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project. Thank you for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On Monday's show, we'll talk about traumatic brain injuries, the strange behavior that goes along with them, and how they're treated. Also, one family's life in Botswana. We'll hear about some ancient treasures excavated from the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. Plus, an American-born son of two Iraqis talks about his recent return to Baghdad and his frustration with what's happened there. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake Neeshick, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Julia Cochran, John Cottrell, Stephanie Hughes, and Stephen Valentino. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.